Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. And before we get started with today's program, I wanted to make a comment about yesterday. Yesterday on my program, a caller made a very insensitive comment. And because I was reviewing listener emails to the show, I frankly just missed the comment and I didn't respond to it. I personally and all of us at Wisconsin Public Radio regret that this was heard on our airwaves, and kind of in the face of bigotry, certainly silence is not acceptable. Unfortunately, that's what you got from us yesterday. The caller's choice of words provided a teachable moment, I think, that I missed, unfortunately. We've removed that comment from our archives, and we're reviewing our caller guidelines to make sure that the likelihood of this happening again will be severely reduced or hopefully eliminated. We're certainly committed to civil discourse and diverse points of view, but there's no place for bigotry on the air. So I hope you'll accept my apology and that we can move on. And we have a couple of topics today that I'm sure you're going to find pretty interesting. The first deals with our wineries. Wisconsin boasts several award-winning wineries, and most of the grapes that are used in production are grown right here as well. But a recent report by the Center for Investigative Journalism identified a serious threat to that ag and commercial sector. Tegan Wendland is a reporter with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and she joined their staff in the fall of 2012 while working toward an MS in Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison, actually my home department. She also reports for Wisconsin Public Radio and other public radio outlets, and she authored the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism report. The title of it was Wisconsin's Booming Grape Crop at Risk from Herbicidal Drift. And I hope you'll go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We've posted the entire article, and you can read it there as you listen to me talk with her and also with Dean Vollenberg. Dean is the UW Ag Extension educator for Door County. And Dean, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Larry.
And Tegan Wendland, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
We have, let me turn on your microphone, that'll help.
Thanks for turning my mic on.
You wrote this report on herbicidal drift affecting vineyards. How did you find this story?
So I'm actually from the Driftless region, and I got to give my mom a little bit of credit on this. She kind of brought it to my attention last year. She said that some of the vineyards in that region had been having some issues, and she shared an extension report from the town of Carlton, which was considering a zoning ordinance and imposing some restrictions there. Actually, Dean Vollenberg presented that, so maybe he'll be able to speak a little bit more. So initially, I wasn't sure if this was a problem across the state or if it was kind of a conversation about conventional versus organic farming, which is, you know, sometimes a theme in the Driftless region where I'm from. And so I started investigating it a bit and found that there were reports documenting this issue by university extensions across the country. And that's when I realized that, yes, perhaps this was systemic and not just localized.
And so that's how you got looking into it.
Yes.
And talking with a bunch of people, including Dean Vollenberg. Dean, let's talk about the agricultural part of this. How large is Wisconsin's grape growing industry?
Well, it's a growing industry. One of the things that's interesting is back in about 2006, we had about 350 acres of wine grapes in the state of Wisconsin. Today, we're approaching around 1,500 acres of grapes. And it impacts a large area of Wisconsin. There's 52 of the 72 counties in the state actually do have vineyards. And then if you look at the wineries in the state, there's at least 45 of the counties out of 72 have wineries. So it's a huge growing industry. It's having a large impact not only just on agriculture, but also the tourism industry in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I would think that I'm sure the wineries that I know are wonderful places to visit, and a lot of people visit them every year. And frankly, they provide a lot of local employment, too.
That's correct, Larry, yes. They're growing, and it's become so big that NWTC here in Green Bay, up in Green Bay, Brown County, has actually started a viticulture and enology course through VESTA. So they have actually teachings where people can go to school and learn about the growing grapes or even producing wine.
And are they growing them just for wine or for other uses as well?
Well, mainly for wine. There are a few table grape producers, but mainly wine. There are some people making specialty products. Here in Door County, we have some wine growers or grape growers up on Washington Island that are actually making a product called Verjus, which is actually green grape juice that's going into specialty sauces.
Oh, very interesting. I'm interested to know, Tegan, who you were able to talk with, and you got around a little bit and talked to quite a few people, didn't
you? Yeah, I talked to a couple of farmers, and I went to a vineyard near Ripon, owned by Ryan Prelwitz, the president of the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association. And then another story that I used in the piece was that of Ted Kearns, a vineyard farmer near Platteville, who actually won a lawsuit back in 2007 over an herbicidal drift issue when a neighboring grain farmer's when some herbicides that they had sprayed on their fields drifted and impacted some of his grapes. And mm-hmm. he settled for, I believe, about $150,000. So that's an interesting case. Not all cases end up in court like that, but it does go to show that sometimes this drift issue can be quite serious.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Have you experienced herbicidal drift on your farm, perhaps? Were you able to resolve that situation? Do you work in our grape and wine industry? Certainly love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, post a question or a comment there. And Gary and Bosca Bell up with a question, so let's go to him. Thanks for calling, Gary. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. I'd like to attempt to shine a spotlight on other concerns with agricultural drift. And I'm involved with an organization that's been working for 30 years to try to save our biological diversity in our tall grass prairies in the upper Midwest here. And my organization owns about 2,000 acres of scattered tiny prairie remnants throughout Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois. And as the grain farming rage sweeps across the country, all of these sites are becoming more and more isolated and more surrounded by soybean and corns. And all of these sites harbor threatened and endangered species and biological diversity that hasn't even been totally documented yet. And I'm really concerned about agricultural drift on these sites damaging this biological reservoir. Mm-hmm. And of course we have no way of measuring the value of a drift that would wipe out an endangered species on one of our sites. So we're really concerned about this, and I've called an Anne Marie Ames at the Wisconsin Department of Ag 2 weeks ago to voice my concerns, and have yet to hear anything from the Department of Ag mm-hmm. on these concerns, and wondering how agricultural drift and its impact on non-valuable monetary crops can be dealt with, or whether there's even any attention being paid to that. And I hope the grape growers do well.
Yeah, well, if the grape growers do well, Gary, they're probably going to help out where you're concerned as well. You know, I think I've got some questions for Tegan on this, because I know she has visited with Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection people. But first, before that, Dean, maybe you can talk about this whole business. What happens with herbicidal drift? What's going on here?
Well, one of the biggest basic issues we're dealing with is a broad category of herbicides that we're really concerned with are phenoxy herbicides, the overall class, and that contains products that contain 2,4-D and dicamba. Mm-hmm. And these products not only can drift or go off-site after spray application, where the droplets move either in the wind current, they can also, over time, they can revolatilize on the leaves of the plants in which they're applied, and then they can move off-site again. So it's just not during the time of application, but it's also the time after that, especially if they're applied when the temperatures are warm, especially over 75 to 80 degrees. So those are the kind of the issues that we're really worried and concerned about.
And as you look at grapes, and possibly some of the plants that Gary's talking about, but at least let's zero in on the grapes here for a minute. They're very sensitive, are they not?
There are many sensitive crops, but grapes are particularly sensitive. They're sensitive to a hundredth of the recommended application rate, according to some studies, and can be impacted up to several miles away from where the herbicide has been applied. And it's interesting that Dean pointed out the volatilization issue, because that's a big problem for DatCap. It's hard to investigate the source of some of this drift if it has volatilized and sort of traveled miles away. It's hard to find out where it came from if it's volatilized like that.
Oh, yeah. What approaches are they taking?
So the caller mentioned Anne-Marie Ames, and she's a new employee who focuses on networking farmers with other farmers through a website called Driftwatch, which is run by Purdue University. And that website hosts a handful of maps of a handful of different states, including Wisconsin, where specialty crop farmers can add their farm to this map and let other farmers nearby know that they have these sensitive crops. And so there's a bunch of different crops on there, including bees and grapes, of course, and organic farms. And it's a solution, but it does rely on proactivity on the part of the applicator to go onto the website and check, are their neighbors growing grapes, for example, and then to, you know, make sure that they're sensitive to how they're applying their herbicides as a result. There are restrictions on these herbicides, and technically whoever is applying them should be following the label, and the label lays out, you know, exactly, you know, the temperature at which you should be spraying, the type of nozzle that you should be using, the wind direction, and theoretically, if they're following all of those recommendations, there won't be issues with drift.
Yeah, but still, they're there. We're talking today with Dean Vollenberg, who is UW Extension Educator for Door County, and Tegan Wendland, who is the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism reporter, who wrote a story titled "Impact of Herbicidal Drift on Wisconsin's Grape and Wine Industry." You can join in. If you have a question or comment about this, I hope you'll reach us at 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly we would love to hear from you. Dean, well, Tegan mentioned that herbicides can drift quite a ways. How far can they drift?
Well, it's hard to say. The studies that they've done on volatilization, I mean, it's hard to say, but at least up to a half mile off-site, and sometimes it depends on the wind direction and also if there's temperature inversion. So, and those are things that, you know, farmers or people who are applying chemicals really can't take and justify, or they can't predict if that's going to occur. So It's one of those iffy situations where, right, if there's a problem where a drift does occur and it goes on to a vineyard or a sensitive crop, it's hard to prove where it came from, because these products are being used all over. And, I mean, I think it's worth mentioning that the phenoxy herbicides, 2,4-D or dicamba, for instance, are not only just being used by farmers for their crops, but they're also being used by golf courses. Homeowners can buy them. I think there's about 130 products that are licensed in the state of Wisconsin, of which homeowners can apply to their lawn. Weed and Feed, for instance, that people apply to their lawn, you can apply to your lawn, and those can impact grapes. In fact, I just investigated a case where a guy actually put Weed and Feed on a small demonstration vineyard of about 200 vines, and he ended up with, of course, a lot of damage.
Oh.
Even some grape growers who are new to it don't understand the potential of these herbicides to cause injury to their crops.
Oh, man. Dean Vollenberg and Tegan Wendland, our guests, as we talk about herbicidal drift on our grape and wine industry. I'm Larry Mueller. Robin Cherry, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking with Dean Vollenberg of the UW Extension. He's an ag educator for Door County. And Tegan Wendland, who is a reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, as we visit with them about herbicidal drift, and especially looking at our grape and wine industry here in the state, which is getting to be a pretty impressive and important industry in Wisconsin. Jane in Waukesha has a question. Let's go to her. Thanks, Jane, for calling.
You're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I know this has been coming up, and especially a lot of the diet books, John Robbins, in his and lawsuits with Monsanto. How do you control wind direction? I know our kids have given us a hot air balloon ride for our anniversary, and we went to three locations within, I'd say, 7 minutes because of the different ways that the wind was blowing. So if you're following all the protocol for the application, I mean, truly, is it something that's preventable?
All right. Well, Dean Vollenberg, comment from you?
Well, in some ways, it is preventable. Any type of drift or off-target movement actually is against the label and against the law. So things that growers can do who are applying herbicides can do a number of different things. Watch the wind direction and speed so they shouldn't be spraying. The wind is over 10 miles per hour. They should be using coarse droplets or large droplets instead of fine mist on their sprayers. And they should also be taking and using drift retardants. And also, of course, look at drift watch and see if there's sensitive crops in the area. If they do all of those things, basically the issue probably wouldn't be so great as it is today. But as farms get larger and we see more of the small farmers being going out of business and the farms getting larger, we see a lot more of the application technology or the movement to spraying going over to co-ops, which they have hundreds of thousands of acres to spray in a small amount of time. So there's a lot of education outreach yet to do there, not only with just growers, but also the commercial applicators in the state of Wisconsin.
They can face penalties, too, if they're improperly using these herbicides, and DATCAP comes and does an investigation and finds that there has been a drift issue. They can impose penalties through the local district attorney. So there are some solutions, especially when it comes to commercial applicators, but some of these herbicides are not restricted. So as Dean mentioned earlier, it is possible to go and buy some of these growth hormone regulators at a store and, you know, spray them on your personal property. And the restrictions are not the same when you're a private applicator.
Yeah. Jane, thanks. Appreciate your call. And Nathan's got something from Appleton, has something that kind of relates to this. Nathan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
And what's on your mind?
So I'm basically wondering, you mentioned the case about the farmer who basically settled for the drift that caused damage on his crops. I'm sort of wondering, you know, how do you document that sort of thing? And, you know, what sort of steps as a farmer of those specialty crops can you take to mitigate the risk or, you know, legal action you can take, sort of thing?
Well, Tegan, let me go to you first because you really covered that in your story.
Yeah, I went and spent some time with Ted Gerns, the vineyard farmer near Platteville, who I mentioned earlier had won that case back in 2007 and settled for $150,000 in Lafayette County Circuit Court. And he had called DATCAP after the incident. He told me that it was visible within days that his vines had been impacted by this drift. There are some sort of trademark qualities that the vines will exhibit, the curling leaves, discolored. Sometimes they even completely die off. And so he worked with DATCAP, who came and did an investigation and provided some documentation, you know, of that case that he then used in Lafayette Circuit Court for his case. It took some time to settle, but he was successful.
And it was didn't he experience problems more than 1 year?
Yes, he has had several incidents, he claims, since then, and is pursuing litigation, I think, on maybe two other cases at this point. He's not sure if he's even going to be able to keep his farm. So he's kind of looking to sell it because he feels like maybe he's not going to be able to continue because he's had these, you know, repeated cases.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd like to know more about him, you can look up Beyer Kern's Winery. They also have a little visitor center there, and they do sell their wine. So if you'd like to go chat with him, I'm sure he'd like to hear from you.
Yeah. And Dean, anything to add?
I think the first thing, if you suspect a drift issue on any sensitive crop besides grapes, you should always go to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection website. Under the pesticides tab, you can go down, and there's a place where you can write a formal complaint. And once that complaint is in the system, they have to come out and investigate. So that's the first place to start.
But one of the things that I feel like I heard repeatedly from farmers was that, or from the vineyard farmers, was that it's a challenge because they can't really do anything about the problem until there's been a problem. You know, until they've been impacted by drift, they can't, you know, get DATCAP to come out and investigate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they can make a you can complain if you think that there will be issues of drift, but generally you don't know until your crop has actually been impacted.
Yeah, understood. Nathan, thank you for calling. Does that answer your question? I appreciate the call. Wayne in Denmark, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to add a little something that I had a few instances where farm fields adjacent to the property were spraying, and they actually covered my – I have some organic gardens and stuff that I do a lot of sustainable beehives and things like that. Anyway, the herbicide basically was on an extremely windy day, and it covered the property, and it basically covered me and my dogs, and windows were open. And one of the things that it caused me to look up the MSDS of the pesticides or herbicides that are being applied. A lot of that, it talks about how people should be having goggles, and you know, when they use this substance, rubber gloves, and they go on and on. But the way the laws are right now, an applicator can not only spray the substance and not tell people what it is being applied, but they really disregard a lot of the rules regarding it as far as the pesticide application permits, because there's no teeth in the law right now. They pretty much do what they want, and if you do call the ag people, Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, they'll come out and do a test, but there's really no... There's really no fines really that they can levy. They have no authority really over that problem. So I just wanted to share that.
Thanks, Wayne, for calling. Dean, is that all correct?
Well, you have to remember the label on the product is the law, and the growers, whoever the applicator is applying the pesticides, whether it's a herbicide or a fungicide or insecticide, it should be followed. In using the protective equipment that the label specifies. And so all of those things have to be. And DATCAP does follow up quite a few times with sprayers or applicators who are not applying correctly, and there have been quite a few fines leveraged against a number of applicators in the state of Wisconsin. So they are out there doing their job, but it's just the amount of power they have and the amount of time they have to go and investigate all these situations. So, and, you know, I think it's worthwhile pointing out that wearing personal protective equipment and applying it is, you know, something that anybody should take, because these actually are all poisons. Yeah.
So DATCAP provided a list of these complaints to me, 58 complaints that involved alleged drift incidents between 2007 and 2011, which was the most recent year for which the data was available. And in nearly every one of those cases, applicators were issued at least a warning. And in 33 cases, a civil complaint, and there was one criminal complaint during that time. So they do go out and investigate these complaints, but they don't directly issue fines. It has to go through the local DA.
Okay, there we go. Thanks again, Wayne, for calling. I want to give Ted a chance in Platteville. Ted, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for putting the show on.
You bet.
I really appreciate it, because it is a serious problem. I'd like to make a couple comments on what I've heard so far. First off, damage does not have to occur to the crop in order for the state to investigate it. The state law says that if significant drift occurs, then a federal law was violated. And if you did not apply it with it, apply it in accordance with the label, a federal law has been applied or has been violated, and the state does not, in every case, investigate whether or not the applicator applied it properly. And matter of fact, the data that was just given about the number of investigated cases, and that you've given at least a warning, I've had six cases and only one warning has been issued out of 6 years of cases.
Cases,
so,
yeah.
It's it's you've got some things there that I'd like to have an opportunity to correct that's going out on there today, and I just covered the one.
Yeah. Well,
so this is Ted Kearns. He's the gentleman who has the vineyard in Platteville that I've referenced several times. Thanks for calling in, Ted. So it sounds like what you're saying is that you don't feel like DACAP's doing a good enough job, even though they have gone out and investigated these 58 complaints, for example, that I just mentioned between 2007 and 2011. You don't think that the investigators are doing a good job?
They just recently told me that they don't take complaints on odors, even if I tried to file a complaint to smell it. And what happened is this year, I smelled 2,4-D on a Sunday morning. The wind was blowing at 20 miles an hour. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning, and I called them on Monday, and I was told by DACAP that they don't investigate odors, and to just make a comment, just to note the date and time, and then if I see damage, relate it back.
Yeah.
But the state law says the damage does not have to occur. It just says the federal law has to be violated. And if the federal law is violated, if significant drift, and if you can smell it some miles away from where it was applied, then that's significant drift.
Yeah.
Well, I know that it has been documented that you can sometimes smell the actual drift. So I know that that's true, but I can't speak to the rest of what Ted has said here as far as DACAP doing a proper job investigating these claims.
Dean, do you have any comments?
Yeah. I think what Ted is trying to bring up is the fact that, you know, drift, you have to, DACAP, when they're doing the investigation, has to show that there was actually off-target movement. So the spray came off of the intended target area. So the fact is you have to have some kind of indicator what that off-target movement was, so you have to have some type of damage. It's easy to see with things like such as glyphosate, for instance, if the spray boom or drift occurs onto a lawn, of course, since it's non-selective, it kills everything. Something with the phenoxy herbicides, yes, you can smell it, but is that smell going to take and cause damage to the grapes at a later time or at a later time? So that is something that is difficult to prove, and that's why I could see why DACAP probably would not come out and investigate, because everybody knows if you even walk around Madison in the springtime, you can smell 2,4-D in the air going on all the lawns for controlling dandelions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Ted, again, thank you for calling. I appreciate it very much. I want to give Kathy and Delavan a chance to join in, too. You can join us as well at 1-800-642-1234. We have open lines to get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Kathy and Delavan, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just have a cautionary tale for everyone on both sides of the issue.
Sure.
We are third-generation farmers, and hopefully into the fourth generation. Our son just started part-time with us, and we were accused last year or at the end of 2011 or so of causing drift, and we were investigated, and the investigator was very good to us, did a thorough job, took lots of information, and found that we were doing everything the way we were supposed to. We had all of our certifications. We had all documentation about the date, time, wind speed, where it was applied, when it was applied, and that throughout the course of the investigation, they took tissue samples from the person that said that they were affected by drift and found that was a false claim against us. But our insurance company got very, very, very nervous about it, and we have since upped our insurance on such things, which is costing us money. But I would caution the public that they shouldn't assume that that's what's going on just because you smell something or maybe you see something that you think that's what's happening. And I'm really getting concerned about the farming economy in general with this issue because, you know, after that incident, our insurance company more or less told us, you know, you need $3 million for coverage of this because, you know.
Yeah.
So it could hurt everyone in the long run. I mean, I'm sure there are people who aren't following label instructions, you know, I'm sure that is possibly happening. But on the other hand, the general public does need to be aware that we still feed the world.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy, I'm really glad that you called and you bring up an important point that I heard repeatedly from just about everyone that I spoke to, that the real solution is for farmers to network with each other, and that farmers need to build their relationships with each other. So, for example, Wollersheim Winery, a well-known winery in the state, had responded to an email from the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association saying that they had issues in the past, but they have worked together with farmers nearby so that they know when they're going to spray, and they have a relationship with them that is healthy, and they're aware of what herbicides they're using and when, and so they haven't had any issues since then. And that's the same thing that Ryan Prelwitz, the president of the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association, told me as well. So talking to your neighbor is really important.
Yeah. Dean, something to add?
I think that's one of the most important things is to be a good neighbor no matter what. Farmers are farmers, whether you're growing grapes, growing soybeans or corn. It's really networking to create that awareness of what you're doing so your neighbor knows. So if you have grapes nearby and you're growing, let's say, winter wheat, and you're going to spray 2,4-D, what are some alternatives that you could do to mitigate the problem potentially of drifting onto grapes or volatilization into the crop? So there are ways around it, and I think that's a good point. And it's also making good neighbors with not only that, but our urban-rural divide, even homeowners who live in the country who are applying these products to their lawn. Several cases where I've investigated where the product has been coming off the lawns, and they're just unaware that grapes are growing in the area. So it's creating that awareness.
Actually, very good. Kathy,
I just would like to add that none of us wants to pay more taxes, but we really appreciate the University Extension and the helping with getting the certifications and that kind of thing. We get notified when we need to renew. The materials are there when we go, and, usually we're signing up at the last minute because of schedule, but, I think that's a huge, huge
benefit.
Benefit, and, on the farmer's end, things are getting more and more and more complicated in that area, and it's getting harder and harder to keep up with all those things, but if you're going to be an egg, it seems you have to do it. But on the other hand, we really need the public to understand we're feeding the world.
Yeah.
Well, the UW Extension does offer an annual applicator training program for farmers and commercial and private herbicide applicators.
Yeah. And I'm sure it provides, like in Dean's situation, where you reside and where you work, Dean, man, you've got to have a lot of grapes. You've got to have a lot of fruit trees and that sort of thing that could also be affected.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of sensitive crops in Wisconsin. Grapes are kind of like the canary in the coal mine for the phenoxy herbicides. But remember that we're a very diverse state, much different than Illinois, Iowa, even Minnesota, where we have even solanum crops, so tomatoes and potatoes. We have a huge potato industry in the state, very sensitive to the phenoxy herbicides. So it's really creating that awareness amongst all the farmers that are growing these crops, these diverse crops, and the corn and soybean growers, so we can really come together to network and make people aware of what each person is doing out in the community.
Marilyn in Dover, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. All of this talk just struck my memory. Years ago, I was interning at the local paper in Wausau, and one of the stories that I covered at that time was a child in the area. Her father, a farmer, was spraying the field, really wasn't paying too much attention to the wind, and the child was sitting in her sandbox eating crackers, and some of the insecticide drifted on the crackers, and she ate them, and she did not survive.
Hmm. And that was
a long time ago, and there were no regulations, but let's put it this way, it could happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a sad, sad story, and it's certainly not a story we want to hear. And that happened back in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. I'm certain our rules are a lot better than they were, but there's probably still a ways to go, Dean, or not.
Maybe a little ways to go. I think some of the technologies that are coming out, application technologies, drift retardants that growers can add to their spray tanks, using coarse spray droplets, paying attention to the weather and the wind patterns especially, and also how warm it is when using phenoxy herbicides is things that growers can all do to mitigate some of these problems we see with these herbicides coming into the grape vineyards or even potatoes or tomatoes that are grown in the state.
So is it the warmer it is, the worse the problem? Or
yeah, especially with growers who are using ester formulations, which is a cheaper product that they can use, but they also have better weed control in the crops, but they also have a potential to volatilize and lift off much easier than using amine type 2,4-D or dicamba products.
Yeah. Alan LaCrosse, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have two comments. One is that if we're going to err on the side of safety, the first thing we ought to start with is not letting people spray all kinds of stuff that we really don't know what the results are on their lawns. It's one thing to talk about agriculture, but, you know, to kill dandelions and wind up with phosphorus and everything else and all kinds of pesticides and herbicides is a big mistake. But secondarily, we're all inadvertently and indirectly benefiting from the cost to many thousands of people in the third world, particularly I'm speaking of Nicaragua, where there's a huge pesticide use, and now there's a huge, huge number of people who are suffering kidney failure. And the sugar companies, which make, you know, beer and rum and whatever else in Nicaragua, claim that, well, their pesticides couldn't possibly cause this. But, you know, these people are never going to get dialysis, generally speaking. They're not going to get kidney transplants. But they're producing low-cost sugar, low-cost rum, low-cost, you know, other products that we benefit from, but we never, ever see the fact that there's thousands of people dying of disease. So when we look at it here, of kidney failure, when we look at it here, we really don't know. You can do public health studies, so forth and so on, but you've already mentioned the fact that you really don't see some of this stuff for a while. And my tendency is to say, we don't know the stuff is safe because you can't prove that. If you smell something, there's something there. Secondly, let's err on the side of caution and find a way to farm without using as much of this, at least. And secondarily, acknowledge our debt to the third world that, you know, we have shipped a lot of these pesticides and herbicides under the assumption that, well, they can use them and somehow we'll get away with it.
Hmm. Thanks, Al, for calling. Can I get a comment from Dean?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that all of these products, whether you're dealing with any type of pesticide, the first thing to remember is, yes, pesticides inside means they cause death to something. So you have to err on the side of safety. So any person who is using them or considers using them, they should use them judiciously and not inadvertently apply them where they don't belong, or potentially not even use them at all. And I think as you look at the lawn care industry and things like that, where a lot of these products are used, even on golf courses, they do have some issues with safety, and people should really consider keeping their pets off the lawn, especially if they use them, until at least for a few days. 2,4-D is a known endocrine disruptor, so people really should consider what they want to do as far as lawn care and using these products, which can also impact grapes negatively also.
Yeah. Boy, lots to think about and lots to consider here. I'm really glad we had this conversation. We didn't resolve everything, but we learned, at least I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners did as well. Dean and Tegan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Dean Vollenberg is the UW Extension Ag Educator for Door County. Tegan Wendland, reporter with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, who's also working on a master's degree in my home department, as a matter of fact, life sciences communication. There's a lot of innovative research going on relating to alternative energy here, and that research is going on right here at the UW-Madison, especially at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. And we're going to have a chance to talk about that coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.